You're listening to Mike and Kristen,
the podcast.
I'm Mike, a musician, writer, and producer.
And I'm Kristen, a painter, writer, and designer.
Our show is all about following dreams, taking chances, and what life as an artist is really about.
Together, we bring you weekly guest interviews and thought-provoking conversations.
Let's go! We are back again, another episode of Mike and Kristen, episode 110. With Bill Monk as our special guest this week, an amazing man who's hiked some trails. We'll get into all that. But first and foremost, Kristen Harrington, how are you doing today?
I'm doing exceptionally well. Thank you. We are well into April. I have clothes on the line, which is one of my favorite parts of the warm weather.
I think my favorite thing is at a point in late-ish April to mid-May, there's this smell that the ocean gives off. And I've never been able to find a scientific reason about it. So maybe if one of our listeners knows why.
Bill probably knows.
But when you're close to, as far as I know, the Atlantic Ocean, maybe it happens everywhere. But there's this beautiful smell that smells like everyone in your community has hung their laundry out in the sheets. And this smell is sifting through the air.
That's a great smell. There must be a name for that or a term.
It's a hard thing to look up.
Right.
The smell of the ocean in mid-May when things start to blossom and
warm
up.
Yeah, and it just
up.
Comes up with song lyrics or something.
Yeah. So
yeah, we're definitely curious about this. Please let us know.
Because it doesn't happen before and it doesn't happen after. Obviously, there's a smell of the ocean year-round, and I certainly like that. But there's this, again, fresh laundry smell that it gives off in certain parts. And we live close to the ocean here, so.
What are some of your other favorite smells?
Turkey cooking in the oven.
Okay.
A lot of them, I guess, are food-based.
Yeah, like I expected nothing less.
Chocolate chip cookies would be up there. A campfire.
Yeah, good ones.
Yeah, just the smoke of a campfire, just covering your whole body. A lot of outdoors as well. The woods, when you go to a place in the middle of nowhere and just all the different smells that are surrounding you. I'm sure Bill knows that very well.
Yeah, I would say better than most. He spent a very good part of his life in the woods and for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
He, I'm sure, has adopted many skills that the average person might not have the desire or opportunity to inherit.
So the chat will cover all this, but Bill is an amazing, amazing guy who has hiked two of the biggest hikes in the world, the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail, which are both over 2,000 miles long, and he did it straight through.
What an accomplishment. I feel accomplished if I get my dishes done by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's pretty impressive.
Pretty impressed. And we did select a quote for this week's Thoughts and Things.
An applicable one.
An applicable one. So cue the music.
Thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things, thoughts and things.
So who is this quote from, Michael?
Lao Tzu.
Well done. Great pronunciation.
We looked up a video.
Chinese philosopher. Chinese pronunciation. Lao Tzu. English pronunciation, Lao Tzu.
It's the same. And yeah, the Chinese pronunciation and the English one are the exact same.
But makes it easy to remember.
Lao Tzu, Laotzu.
And the quote reads, "The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step."
And that sums up any journey. You need to take that first step if you're going to get the mail or if you're going around the world, if you're going anywhere in the world, like just starting off is the main thing.
This is a unique metaphor ultimately for this episode, because I expect part of this message is exactly what you're saying. Any project, adventure, endeavor requires just taking that first initiative, which is hard often, like just getting started is often the hard part. in Bill's case, it was quite literal in it being thousands of miles and taking that first single step. But this was something he trained for and was excited about and prepared to take on all of those thousands of steps that came after the first one.
Yeah, and he's a very interesting man who was born in the U.S. and eventually settled in Annapolis, where we interviewed him in his beautiful house and met his wonderful wife as well. Mm-hmm. Just lovely people.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
And the house they live in was built by her great-grandfather. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. It's a beautiful home. You can tell it's been very well taken care of and was a B&B for a long time. And they are in their golden years and enjoying new adventures in their home. But they opened it up to us and welcomed us with open arms to spend an afternoon and record this episode.
So yeah, let's check it out. Bill Monk, amazing man, living in Annapolis, Nova Scotia. And
one hell of a story.
Yeah, listen to this amazing story here, folks.
For having us here in your home.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, and oh. you folks have lived here for how many years?
Going on 20. Yeah.
It's beautiful, Bill.
Yeah.
And it's your wife's great-great-grandfather's?
That's right.
He built it.
Captain Joseph Hall. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Was he what was his trade?
He was a sea captain and merchant. Yeah. Yeah, he built this house. He built the house next door. His, Amory's whole family lineage is buried in a cemetery right down the street here.
Mm-hmm. So he was a sea captain and could also just build amazing homes.
Yeah, yeah. And the beauty of this house is that as neat as he was, his daughter was that much more amazing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What's her story?
This house is called A Seafaring Maiden. And when we ran our bed and breakfast, it was called The Seafaring Maiden. She, when she was 18 years old, sailed his ship from New Orleans to Liverpool, England. Jeez. So actually what happened was he and his crew fell ill, and she had to captain the ship the rest of the way.
So did she already have experience doing that?
Sailing with her dad, yeah. Yeah, so she is in maritime history to be known to be the first woman to captain a ship across the Atlantic.
Is there literature written about her or archives?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Unreal. But you and your wife, Annie, mm-hmm. You didn't meet here.
No.
What's your love story?
My work history was working in the grocery industry. Worked for a company for 31 years in the Southeast United States, public supermarkets. I guess I was a stock clerk at the time, and she had just finished university. And was going to do an internship as a teacher and needed a summer job. And she was working at a new store, came into the new store that we're just finishing up, getting ready to open as a cashier. I saw her going on a store tour and thought to myself, I'm asking that girl out.
She stood out to you.
Yeah. All the stock clerks wanted to ask her out, but yeah. I was first.
You had the courage.
Yeah.
I think he had his fast hiking legs actually under him from day one.
That's right.
He served you well in all kinds of areas of your life.
That's right. Yeah.
So where were you born yourself, Bill?
Yeah, I was born in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah.
Yeah. Raised on Long Island, New York. As a young man at 10, we moved to Miami.
Okay.
My folks, I guess my father had lost his job, needed a new beginning, and decided to pick Miami as that.
Yeah.
And he ended up actually owning a bar in Miami. Annie and I met. I was 20 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Owning the bar, did you ever work there as a youngster?
Nah,
because we met you at, well, the shirt you're wearing now, Annapolis Brewing Company.
Yeah, that's right.
First time we met you.
Yeah.
And the very next day after, well, we told stories, oh, that our bartender, just a nice guy, really, really down to earth, friendly guy, good to chat with. And we were staying in town here in Annapolis for our anniversary.
Yeah.
And we were trying to take in everything we possibly could in the town. And so we woke up the next morning and we opened the paper, whatever the local paper is. and saw that there was a book reading happening at the local library. So, oh, this will be cool. It's about a guy who hiked the Appalachian Trail and the Pacific Crest Trail. They're like the two biggest hikes that I know of in North America, maybe the world. And like, this will be super cool. So we show up there, and lo and behold, it's our bartender from the night before giving this talk. And you're like, hey, what are you guys doing here? Well, sure. We're come to see you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, Mike. I end up starting my work at Annapolis Brewing Company knowing that it would be my dream job.
Yeah.
You know, I had a real career, a real job, high pressure, and retired from that after 31 years. Had hiked the AT and did a book launch at the Annapolis Brewing Company.
Yeah.
Mm.
And didn't work there. 2 years after that, I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail.
Yeah.
And went in, met the owner, Danny McClare, over a beer. We shook hands over me doing a book launch at the tap room then.
Yeah.
After we shook hands, I said, you know, Danny, I said, I've always wanted to work in a tap room. Well, when can you start then? But, you know, that chance meeting with you and Kristen, you know, I love people, love chatting it up. And then to see you walk into my the talk I was giving at the library, I thought, you know, it's fortuitous. You know, perfect.
And now we're in your beautiful house.
Yeah.
A fire going in the background. The old grandfather clock clicking away. What a beautiful space. And thanks for inviting us here to be able to do this. We were amazed by your story.
Thank you.
And we'll get into all that. But why don't you tell us how you got into hiking and these massive hikes, I guess.
Oh, sure. I'm blessed. I have two sons.
Yeah.
And, you know, just always enjoyed the outdoors with them, introducing them to the outdoors. And they're both still pretty active as well. In fact, my youngest son is, he's a physical education teacher. Okay. So he's extremely athletic. My older son, athletic. He's got two daughters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, in their teen years, we hiked the AT every summer, did a section of it, what would be called section hiking. Hike 100 miles. Wife would pick us up, take us home, and the next summer we'd pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
And I always knew I wanted to do a through hike and knew I had to be retired to do it.
Yeah.
For those listening that aren't familiar with some of the jargon, what does a through hike mean?
Ah, good question, Kristen. So a through hike is starting a hike and ending the hike in a calendar year or a 12-month period. Section hiking would be, which is popular as well, is somebody hiking a section of it, picking up maybe the next year or year after that, and hope with the hope of completing that trail. Mm-hmm. But I'm a all-in kind of guy.
Yeah. So the first big through one you did was the Appalachian Trail?
It was, yeah.
How long is that? And where's the geography, just so people know?
Sure. So it's 2,190 miles. It starts in Georgia and it ends in Maine. It runs through 14 states on the eastern seaboard.
I realize you were born in the States and that this hike in particular is in the U.S., so it makes sense for things to be referred to in mileage. As I was reading your book, I couldn't help but try to do the math in kilometers.
Yeah.
Are those hiking trails specific to mileage, or do they also indicate kilometers for some of the Canadian hikers doing southbound or I suppose either direction? Yeah. But
no, if there's any signage, and there is signage on the trail, it's all in miles.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm guilty. Sorry.
We'll forgive you. My math skills have sharpened since reading the book.
Yeah. Because
I would be reading, there were days that you were hiking 30 plus miles. And I, as somebody who has done long distance running in their past, I thought he's hiking a marathon or more.
Yeah.
Daily, almost, give or take. I mean, I know there were longer and shorter, but just to say how, for those who are Canadian that are listening to this, the distance that you were able to travel in a single day is pretty miraculous.
It's funny. You start hiking and you don't have legs. You know, you can hike 10 miles that first day, maybe 12, 15 miles by the end of the week. But as time goes on, you become superhuman.
Mm-hmm. You know, it seems just that way.
Yeah, you know, it's like there's no mountain you can't climb. You got legs like tree trunks, and it's so satisfying to know that you can climb these mountains. And I'm blessed that I have the ability, I have the help to do it. Mm. You know, 30 miles would be a big day. You know, but it's a triumph. You know, it's something you can hang your hat on.
It's very impressive. Yeah.
Did you train much before that first hike?
Yeah. well, you see the staircase over there.
Yeah.
When I was preparing for the Appalachian Trail, you know, it was dead winter, and I would do a lot of snowshoeing. But when those days I couldn't get outside, I actually would go up and down those stairs several hundred times.
Yeah. You know?
But, you know, there's really no way to train for hiking 2,190 miles except just to do it.
But you felt like when you said that you started out maybe doing 10 or 12 miles and that increased with time, do you feel like that was attributed to your physical capability or that you were just in a zone, in the flow of things?
You know, I may have lied. I don't know if I've ever only hiked just 10 miles. You should start off, but I'm all in, and you know, to avoid injury, you should take it kind of easy and not overdo it. But once I get going, I have a hard time stopping, you know, so, you know, to hike the AT in 142 days, it takes tenacity. It takes, you know, someone who knows that they're going to wake up in the morning, eat breakfast, pack everything up and just hike all day long, you know, get to camp, set up, eat dinner, go to sleep, wake up and do it again the next day. And, you know, there's a huge dropout percentage on these hikes.
How many people finish? Do you know the percentage?
About 25% will finish. Yeah.
And how long does it take the average hiker to do the Appalachian Trail?
4 months, you know, about 4 months.
And the PCT, what are the stats on that one?
Yeah, that's you know, they're two worlds apart.
Yeah.
You know, the AT, and I write about this in my second book, that it was my first love. You know, there's an emotional attachment to it, I think, because of my sons and myself hiking it together. You know, so there was a special place in my heart for the Appalachian Trail. But then I found the Pacific Crest Trail. And I thought, well, nothing could be as wonderful as what the Appalachian Trail is. Klingman's Dome is the highest point on the Appalachian Trail, just over 5,000 feet. And then you get over to the West Coast, and those are the new mountains. Mm. And then you're up the
actual mountains.
Yeah, those are 14,000 plus feet.
Yeah.
And, you know, just open sky, and you can see forever. And it's just, there's no comparison. You know, if somebody were to ask me, hey, you know, if you picked one or the other, which one would you hike? You know, I mean, they're actually seeking advice. They want to hike one. Mm. And they don't know, hey, do I hike the AT or do I hike the PCT? The PCT, hands down, is just spectacular.
And the Pacific Crest Trail, the PCT, that was kind of made a little more popular with the book and the movie Wild,
Cheryl Strayed.
Cheryl Strayed. Yeah. That's
or Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
Whatever's more familiar to you.
Yeah, it's funny. I tell people they'll bring up Cheryl Strayed and the story of Wild, and it was a great story. And the movie was difficult to watch. I mean, she was a tortured person, and she went through so much adversity in her life. But I tell people all the time that she didn't hike the whole trail. I did. And she gets more notoriety than I did.
You need a movie about you today, first.
Bill, things are about to change in your life. No.
Cheryl Strayed, leave her in the past. Yeah. Bill Monk is the future here, folks.
Yeah. We talked about the physical aspect of this. I have two questions to ask about this component. Would someone who's a complete beginner be able to go and build that resilience, or would you not recommend that be the approach if you've never done it before?
It's a great question, Kristen. I got to tell you, I think anybody could do it. And once again, it takes, I've seen people that were, in my opinion, out of shape, and I looked at them, I thought to myself, that person's never going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I know, I pass them. And then I make camp, and I'm cooking my dinner, and I look up, and that person's walking past me, and they're continuing their hike.
Mm.
And it's so humbling that you just cannot judge who can and who cannot do it. It's impossible. And yeah.
And how much of that, because I'm making an assumption perhaps here, but I expect that your mental resilience is as much, if not more, of this equation to success.
Yeah. Those that start a hike and complete a hike, there's so many variables. There's so many things that can keep you from completing the hike. One of them is your headspace. One is your physical, you know, injuries play a major role in people leaving the trail. Financial.
Yeah.
You know, some it's expensive.
Yeah, I was surprised at this part in your presentation at the cost, but well, yeah, I'll get to that.
Sure. But I've seen young men fit and you know, in their mid-20s. You know, when I hiked the PCT, I turned 60. I see young men in their 20s so fit and so strong, and then they quit. They'll go halfway and say, I'm tired of hiking. And it's like, why are you doing this? You've hiked half of it. And I think a big part of it, Kristen, is, and Mike, is that they're young and they think, I can always come back and do it another time. But to me, there's no time like the present.
Yeah.
None of us are guaranteed tomorrow.
Sure.
You know, and I'm a firm believer if I start something, I'm going to finish it. And I've hiked with some of the most amazing young people. And it's so wonderful to see that there's still people out there, young people, tomorrow's leaders, that have that same tenacity and that same oomph to start something and finish it. I'm not taking anything away from those that couldn't finish it. You know, because like I said, there's all these variables. Yeah, you know, there's so many reasons why people come off the trail.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Out of their control.
Hey, Kristen, do you know what's awesome?
Theme parks? Cotton candy?
Well, yeah, but I was going to say saving money.
Saving money is awesome.
Well, the sponsor of this week's podcast episode, Ryan O'Malley with Allstate Insurance, can help you save money with home and auto insurance.
That sounds fantastic, but I don't like dealing with call centers and talking to like 30 different people.
That's the amazing thing with Ryan. You don't have to deal with a call center. You get to speak with someone local living in Cole Harbor who knows our area, our weather, our vehicles, and our housing needs.
Ooh, I love the sound of this. And with the money we will save through bundling our insurance with Ryan, you can take me to a theme park and buy me cotton candy.
We can buy anything you want with all the money we'll save.
I'm sold. Sign me up. How can I get in touch with Allstate Insurance?
Well, you can call Ryan O'Malley at 902-210-1293 or email romalley@allstate.ca. And he's been a fantastic supporter of local arts in our podcast, so we really give the thumbs up to Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan, for helping Nova Scotians save money while protecting the things that matter to us. You already have 108 five-star reviews on Google. Prepare for even more. Going back to this idea of your state of mind, you are someone that clearly has a background that may lend itself well to this idea of commitment. You're going to finish what you started. How would you say, though, that your state of mind differed at the end of that hike? Did you feel that you had changed maybe mentally, spiritually, emotionally, just as a man?
Yeah. Gosh, you ask great questions. You know, it's so funny. Starting the hike, I didn't feel it was going to be any type of a religious experience. I didn't think it was going to be a spiritual thing. But I don't think it can be anything other than that. When you're out in nature and you're seeing this glorious earth and what it I tell people all the time, I've seen things that nobody else will ever see unless they walk there also.
Yeah.
You know, and you can look at all the pictures. It's just not the same. You know, it just can't be captured like your eyes capture it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, extremely spiritual. I will end, when I ended the AT, I definitely came home. I had people tell me, you don't seem like the same person. I just had an entirely different perspective on life. I definitely had a different perspective on people. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm going to say I regained my faith, mm-hmm. especially in young people. Face it, it's a young person's sport. You know, 6-year-olds, there's some of us out there doing it, but it's young people that are doing it. And to be able to hike with them is a gift. There's just, I tell people all the time, you tend to hear, oh, young people, they're not like they used to be. You know, they're, you know, we're doomed. It says every generation, and it's a lie. We're going to be fine.
Yeah. Yep.
What's going through your mind? Pretend you're just in the middle of the hike, in the middle of the day, or a few hours in. What are you focusing on? Are you just taking in your surroundings? Are you trying to be present? Are you listening to music? Where's your headspace?
It's so funny how many times I'll be on the trail and there'll be a hiker ahead of me. And I do hike pretty fast. I'm a pretty fast hiker. So I'm just trekking along and I see this person and I'm coming up behind them and I'll say, hey, how you doing? And nothing from them. No response. And I'll get a little bit closer and say, hey, now coming up behind you. No response. And it's not till I pass them, I realize they've got earbuds in and they're listening to music. And once again,
or a podcast, maybe Mike and Chris.
Yes, that's right. And they will. There'll be people listening to podcasts. Yeah. And I kind of get that. But I can't see myself doing that. I want to hear those wild turkeys. You know, I want to hear a wild boar running through the brush. I want to, you know, see the deer. And I think sometimes if you're too intent on that music or that podcast, you're missing some of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I when I'm hiking along, I'm really observant. I'm listening, just trying to take it all in. Also usually thinking about my next meal.
Yeah.
Because I'm usually really hungry.
Yeah. How many calories do you burn a day hiking?
Yeah. They say 3,000 to 5,000.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I laughed so many times reading your book about the food component. It was funny because reading the book, there were times that were incredibly emotional, and they were often when you were describing the natural beauty. I really felt like I'm not there with him, but I could really feel your passion for what you were seeing, and especially these untouched places. I mean, what a rare, special moment to be anywhere in the world that is feels untouched in that way. Yeah. Or you would describe going a full day, I think maybe 2 days was your max, of not seeing or encountering another person.
Right.
It felt so liberating to just imagine myself in that environment. And then it was kind of juxtaposed with this humor of being hungry all the time and eating a cheeseburger for breakfast if you could. Mm. And it was just such a spectrum of emotion, even as a reader. And knowing that you were not, like, you were out there alone, but you weren't even having the company of having something in your earbuds,
right,
is all the more presence and just saturated in that feeling. How do you now see the natural world differently being back in this part where you're surrounded by people and cars and noise?
Yeah. Well, it's, I can remember when I got off the Appalachian Trail and a friend picked me up in Maine and getting into the passenger seat of the car and feeling how fast everything was going.
Mm.
Generally I'm walking 3.5 miles per hour and all of a sudden I'm doing 60 miles per hour. What is that in kilometers?
Fast. Yeah,
and it's like everything's a blur and it was like sensory overload.
I bet.
You know, it was really difficult to really the first time I got home and got behind the wheel. You know, I'd been hiking when I was hiking the Appalachian Trail, 142 days. I got behind the wheel of my car and I had to really literally think for a second. Okay, what am I doing here? Make sure I had my head in the right space. Just to drive a car seemed weird. It was just so unusual, but yeah.
When I was younger, I backpacked through Central America and I was gone for 9 or 10 months. And I remember coming back to Canada and just getting water out of the tap, feeling really bizarre, but also I was so grateful that it was that easy. So there was this difference of, I don't know, you become so immersed in a different type of environment, which makes you really grateful for some of these luxuries of home. Yeah. Washing your clothes and showering must be a luxury now.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
There was once you referenced going 12 days without a shower. And that was when I thought, okay, I don't know. I don't know if I could do that. That felt too long for me. What was the impact on your body from even that part of things?
Well, I can remember coming, you know, the trail goes through small towns and there's day hikers that go out for a day hike. And you'll be going along and people will be ahead of you and they hear you clicking and clacking with your trekking poles and they turn around and see you and they part ways. And the closer I would get, I could tell they were trying to get even further away from me because I knew I must have stunk. You know, you don't smell yourself, you know, but as they're parting ways and I'm walking through them and I'm chatting it up with them, being friendly, what have you, I could smell the detergent on their clothes. Your nose, your senses become really hypersensitive. Mm. And I could tell, oh, that's Tide. You know, that's Gain detergent, you know? Yeah. And that woman's wearing way too much perfume.
Yeah. And I'm not wearing enough.
I'm not wearing enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of big concepts we can keep talking about, but I want to ask some very specific questions because I think a lot of people would be really curious. Like, how much does your backpack weigh that you're hiking with, and what do you have in it?
I'm going to start with the AT.
Okay.
So when I started hiking the AT, I started with too much weight.
Yeah.
You know, I had done weekly hikes with my sons, as I mentioned. And now and I've done a lot of research prior to. I've read everything I could, tried to glean as much information as I could, you know, tried to take from those that blazed that trail before me so I could learn from them. But I had too much weight. And I can remember one time being in a town in New York, and it was a donut shop. And I remember I was sitting on a bench eating donuts, having a cup of coffee, and I looked at my pack. And he started opening it and I pulled something out and said, I haven't used this in a long time. I don't really need this.
Mm.
And it was a trash can right next to me. And I just started chucking stuff in the trash can, realizing I don't need it. Mm. I don't need it. And I don't need it. And then I realized you need so little, you know, and that's something else I learned, Kristen, to your question earlier. You know, I came off the trail. What else, what did you take from that? I learned that I need less.
Yeah.
I really don't need that much. If I make a purchase, it's going to be a purchase I absolutely positively think I have to have. I need it.
Mm-hmm.
When you have your whole life on your back, it's amazing how little you need. You know, everything that you have in that pack should serve more than one purpose if it can. When I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, my pack weighed tops with food and water 28 to 30 pounds.
Okay.
Yeah. And that would be a week's worth of food, average 2 pounds of food per day. You know, so if I was going to be a week in between where I could resupply, I'd have 14 or 15 pounds just of food. The rest would be the necessities, you know, my gear.
Tent, sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Your poles, which I think in the presentation you said the poles double as the tent frame, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. The poles for the tent.
Yeah. And are you on a pad or?
Yeah. It's just a sleep mat. Yeah.
It's a
Therm-a-Rest. Yeah. It weighs 12 ounces. My pack that I'm currently using is right at 2 pounds.
Yeah.
What's that in kilograms? Sorry.
We do pounds.
I'm an artist, Phil.
Canadians with their measurements are pretty darn funny, where we do pounds and feet for height, but kilometers for distance.
Sure.
And yeah, we're all over the map, so it's, right, it's all good. And how cold is it getting out there?
Well, on the Pacific Crest Trail, it would be below freezing many times. Yeah. So I'd be in my tent. They say that my tent is just 1 pound.
Yeah.
And it's a two-person tent, they call it. Really lightweight, single-wall tent. They say you gain 10 degrees warmth being inside the tent compared to what the outside temperature is. But I would be under my sleeping quilt with the sleeping bag liner, every stitch of clothes I have, my toque on my head, my gloves on my hands, socks on my feet. And just all snuggled up, trying to stay warm in 30 feet of snow in the Sierra.
Unreal. Yeah. Did you always pack extra food with you should you get held up or your plans go off track?
Yeah, I always kept a dry, freeze-dried meal in the bottom of my pack. And that was my emergency ration if something were to happen. Mm-hmm. And there were many times I'd get into town to do my resupply, and I may have had half a jar of peanut butter or something, you know. But you know, it's the serious consideration is how much weight are you willing to carry. You know, you have to consider your comfort, but also the nutrition that your body requires. So it's a balancing act, and you get really good at knowing what you need to bring with you.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I know you did a lot of this hike from the book that I've read, your second hike, solo, but it didn't start that way. Can you tell us about Scooby and this idea of a trail name?
Oh, sure. So my trail name's Whistler, and I got that name because I whistle a lot.
And other people assigned that to you?
Well, I actually ended up taking it myself.
Okay.
Which is kind of taboo in the hiking community. Yeah, you're supposed to wait for somebody to give it to you. But I didn't want to do, you know, generally it can be a name that's bestowed upon you because something you did that was stupid, idiotic. You know, I knew a guy that his backpack weighed like 60 pounds. And he ended up getting the trail name Chuck Wagon.
Oh.
You know, yeah. So, yeah. So I just one day was driving along and said, I'm going to take the trail name Whistler because I was driving along whistling in my car.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was known as. But I met Scooby in Virginia. I had just come back to the trail. I had to take 8 days off. I had a serious injury to my feet. So I took 8 days off, rented a car, drove down to Mississippi, where my sister lives, and she's an MD, so I spent some time with her. Came back, got into Shenandoahs in Virginia, just entered the Shenandoahs on my first day back. I was hiking along the trail, and the trail crossed a dirt road, and I'm just trekking along, and I happen to look up and look over. I see this dude sitting on a stone wall, and he's eating a bag of chocolate donuts.
Man, so, after your heart, yeah. Huh?
Well, I didn't think much of it. I just said, hey, how you doing? And I just kept on walking. And I said, Whistler, you idiot. Turn back around and talk to the guy for a minute. I guess I kind of got hung up in that headspace that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get really comfortable and you get in your stride. But something just made me turn back around, and I turned around and then I introduced myself, and we kind of hiked out together, and then we ended up separated. I got into camp. Next thing I know, he's camping there, and we woke up the next morning. We left at the same time, and then that next day, we ended at the same place again. And I don't know if it was Scooby, if it was myself that said, hey, you know what, we're hiking the same number of miles, you know, we want to hike out together. And we ended up from Virginia all the way to Maine together.
And a friend for life now.
I love the guy. Yeah, we stay in touch. Yeah, we stay in touch. Yeah, he's in Cleveland, Ohio.
Do you introduce each other on the trail as your trail name?
Yeah.
When you meet someone?
Yeah. You know, about a trail name, and that's a good point, Mike, is, you know, why you take a trail name. And the idea is that you're kind of leaving your old self behind, you know, and you're your new self, and you're on this adventure, so you take a trail name. So Scooby, back to Scooby, when I decided I was going to hike the Pacific Crest Trail, I contacted him and said, hey, you know, you want to, you know, bring the band back together, you know? And he told me, he goes, you know, I don't have a through hike in me. He said, but I'll start with you. So we hiked the southern portion of the Pacific Crest Trail together, which is the first 650 miles that leads into the Sierra Nevada. And I tried to convince him to keep on going with me. And if you've read the book like you did, Kristen, you know that story. And yeah, he's a good man. And in fact, he wrote the foreword to the book too.
So obviously there's amazing things you're experiencing and these life-changing moments. There must be some things out there that are hard. Obviously just pushing through and accomplishing this is a challenge, but are you afraid of things out there, like bears in particular? Because that's something on the Pacific Crest Trail. I'd be terrified that I'd come across a grizzly.
Yeah. Well, there's no grizzlies on the PCT.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, yeah, they're just black bears. But on the Continental Divide, there are. Yeah. And that goes up into Wyoming, Montana. But black bears, am I afraid of them? No.
Yeah, black bears aren't. I thought there was grizzlies because you're in the West Coast area there.
But. Yeah. Not afraid of bears. You know, you hear coyotes all the time. Not afraid of them.
Snakes?
Not afraid of snakes. Saw lots of snakes in the desert. Actually, on most of the PCT, saw lots of rattlesnakes. But no, I'm not afraid of them. You know what I'm afraid of is ticks.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've seen.
Says the Nova Scotian.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of hikers have to get off the trail because of Lyme disease.
Yeah.
Wow.
So more, you know, getting to your tent every night, checking yourself out, make sure you didn't pick up a tick.
You casually tell the story of a mouse getting in your tent and running across your bag, and I thought that is not the tone I would have written that chapter.
Yeah, that was all in fun too, wasn't it? But yeah, you know, rodents chewing a hole in your tent, that's aggravating, you know? So, but no, I'm not afraid of anything. Yeah. You know, I'll tell you the biggest fear that I did have on the trails I've been blessed to hike, outside of ticks, was ending up hiking with somebody that you just couldn't get along with. And I had some really unfortunate experiences. 99% of the people are absolutely amazing and they have the same exact goals that you have. But there's some bizarre people out there, you know, and you try to distance yourself from them.
Yeah. That said, you speak so kindly and heartfelt about the wonderful people that you encountered on the trail in small towns and those rooting for you here back at home that helped you with logistics, I'm sure, just keeping your spirit alive. Tell us about how that really factored into the success of your hike.
So yeah, there's trail angels. Okay. A trail angel is someone that, provides, comfort in the way of food or maybe a ride to a town so you can resupply. And these are people that, especially around trail towns, that have no expectation of anything except maybe hearing your stories, you know, or just the satisfaction of knowing that they help somebody. And, you know, we talk about people, young people, sometimes getting a bad rap. When I hiked through New York, when I was on the Appalachian Trail, you hear all these stories about New Yorkers and how, you know, the bad rap they get for their, you know, their reputation. They're the most glorious, wonderful people, you know, and they're so gracious and so giving. And, you know, I could be trying to hitch a ride into a town so I can resupply for my next section of the next 100 miles. And there'd be a car going in the opposite direction, turn around and take me to wherever I wanted to go, you know, and then take me to McDonald's and buy me a Big Mac, you know, and it just the generosity and kindness of people. It's certainly renewed when you find yourself out there, you know, it's humanity. You know, if it reads, it bleeds. You know, with the news media, it's not as bad as they portray.
Mm. Yeah. Back to one of the simple questions here. What kind of food are you packing?
Anything with high calories, high fat, and light in weight.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I wish I could eat a Mountain House dehydrated meal every day, but, you know, they're expensive too. You know, so lots of ramen, lots of instant mashed potatoes. You know, when I'm in town, I always try to pick up a couple pieces of fruit or, you know, an avocado that I can bring with me in my pack and eat it that first day. Blocks of cheese, you know, they hold up pretty well. Lots of tuna packets, you know, for protein. Peanut butter, Nutella is a godsend. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whoever invented Nutella, I love that person.
So the nutrition is essentially just straight up calories. You need to get the right amount.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't drink a single pop when I'm home. But when I'm on the trail, I'll, you know, if I get into a town, I'll drink Coca-Cola like it's my job.
Yeah. Yeah. And you still lost quite a bit of weight.
Oh, yeah. 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 On typically 25 pounds on a long distance hike. Yeah.
Gee. Yeah. We talked about fear of the elements. I expect injury is a common reason that some people have to leave that hike. Tell us about your experience with that, Bill.
Sure. So you're referring to the Pacific Crest Trail.
Your happy birthday.
Yeah, my happy birthday. My birthday's on June 30th, and on June 29th, I was camping. In a small, actually it was a summer camp, and they allowed hikers to use a portion of it. And they even invited me for dinner. And my wife, unbeknownst to me, had contacted them in advance, and they baked a cake for me for my birthday.
Aww.
Yeah. And, I woke up the next morning. It was a glorious day, and it was my birthday. And, my wife, Annie, she said, "Oh, you should take the day off. You should, you know, go to Sisters and it was the town, and you should have a big dinner and you should do this and that." And the other thing, I said, "Nope, it's too beautiful. I'm hiking. It's a beautiful day." So I started my hike, and it was my sons called me that day, and I'm talking to them because I had cell service, and all was right with the world. And met a young man named Ryan, and he was on a section hike, and 21, 22 years old. Just taken a few days before he was taking on a big job, and he just wanted to get out and enjoy the trail. So kind of leapfrogged him a couple times. So at one point, I was pulling some water, filtering some water from a lake, and told him, I said, "Hey, you know, you might want to get water here. There's no water for a while." And put my pack on my back and continued on. I was going to go to a campsite I had seen on my maps that had beautiful views of Mount Jefferson. This is in Oregon. And hiking along, and it came across a snow traverse, which was probably maybe 100 yards across the trail. And I thought to myself, gosh, I just sent my ice axe back the day before. I mailed it back, and I don't need it. I've hiked across hundreds of miles of this. So I just kicked in with my right foot, lifted my left foot, and went straight down the mountain. And heads over heels, rolling over. You know, if I close my eyes, I can see the whole thing occurring all over again.
Mm. Yeah.
Finally, a tree stopped me.
After how many feet had you fallen?
So I use a GPS device. I use a device that calculates based on satellites, you know, where you are on the Earth, but also your
elevation.
Elevation. Thank you. Yeah. And it
pings. I.e. how far you
fall.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So it pings. And at one point it pinged. And then when I was at the bottom, it would ping again. It's recorded.
Okay.
And when I looked back at it later, it was 67 feet that had fallen. So I knew when I had stopped, I was pretty seriously injured. I got my pack off and stood up, and I could feel that I knew I had some broken ribs, and had to get back up to the trail. So I'm pulling my pack behind me. I'm grabbing on the tree roots and branches, trying to get back up to the trail. And I heard somebody, "Is there somebody down there?" And it was that kid, Ryan. And he was up there. I said, "Yeah." I said, "It's Whistler. I'd fallen. I could use some help." So he took his pack off and he came down and kind of assessed everything. And a pretty neat fellow. I feel compelled to tell the rest of the story. I'm going to just put it all out there.
Yes.
A terrific young man. And he, before we started back up to get to the trail, he says, "Whistler," he says, "would you mind if we said a prayer first?" So he, took his hand and put it on my shoulder, and we prayed together, and he got me up to the trail and blew up my mat, laid down on it, had phone service where I was. The device I use, it's an inReach, Garmin inReach, has SOS capability via satellite and texting capability, but I had cell service. So I called, and a call went to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department. And they put together a team, and took them 12 hours to hike in to get to me.
Wow.
Ryan stayed the whole night with me. Got a campfire going, kept me warm. And when that crew of four got in, the rescuers, one of them was a deputy sheriff, they realized they couldn't get me out, so they called for a helicopter. And I got airlifted out. Got flown into Salem, Oregon. Was in the hospital. Amory wanted to talk to me. She wanted to FaceTime me. I didn't want to. You know, it was black and blue and bloody all over. And but I did. And I had hiked half the trail at this point, 1,300 miles. And I figured my hike was over. And I told her, "I guess my hike's over." And God love her, she said, "No, it's not, Bill. Just come home and heal, and you go back and finish." So I came home for 5 weeks, came back to Nova Scotia for 5 weeks, and flew back and picked up where I left off. And that's a great story in its own, but we probably don't have enough time for that. But I got back to the trail where I had to go back 10 miles prior to, so I ended up hiking right past where I had fallen. Obviously, the snow was gone at that point, but I found the exact spot where I fell because the campfire that Ryan had going all night. And it was kind of surreal, but I finished my hike. Yeah. Yep.
That is an amazing story. And how lucky are you that you didn't hit your head bad on the way down?
Yeah. You're looking at the luckiest person on this planet. I could have cracked my head wide open.
Yeah. Yep.
I felt that way hearing your story for the first time when we were at the library about you. It's your birthday. You're out hiking. You have this terrible fall. You're beaten up. You're airlifted out. But your focus was on the people that helped you and your wife's encouragement and the support of the team, how great the medical attention was. I think Mike and I both noted in that moment that it's that headspace, that personality that is what has allowed you to have all of these accomplishments. You could have absolutely let that defeat you.
Yeah.
But you went back and finished it, even with that.
Yeah. Well, when I'm laying on the trail and these four guys hiked 12 hours, they hiked all night long in to come and get me. And I'm sitting here, these people are moving the earth to do everything they can to save this idiot that didn't have his ice axe, didn't put on his crampons, you know, just got cocky and thought that he was superhuman, and he ignored, you know, what he needed to do to be safe. If I could do it all over again, I know that I would have done it so differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not cocky. I'm not, but I allowed myself to get too comfortable. But I'm on my back and I'm seeing this Black Hawk helicopter, this Air National Guard, hovering above me, and this guy rappelling down, the medic. And then they send the Stokes basket down and get me in it, and they raise me up to this freaking amazing machine, and they fly me off to their air base where an ambulance is waiting for me. and they get me into the ambulance, and then they get me to the Salem Hospital, and then I'm laid up there, and then, you know, they triage me, and the ER doctor comes up, and he tells me everything they're going to do. They're going to take my blood. They're going to take x-rays, and everything's happening, this whole team of people, because I'm an idiot. You know,
accidents happen.
It was
an
accident.
That's a long hike to go on and have nothing go wrong.
It is. But, you know, back to when I'm in the helicopter, I'm looking at this guy, this mountain of a man that rappelled down to get me, takes my gear up after I'm already in the helicopter, and he starts working on me, and I'm looking up at him, and I'm trying to say thank you. And he looks down, he sees me trying to mount it, and obviously it's loud, he couldn't hear me anyway. And he just put his hand on my shoulder, and he just looked down at me, and he just said, "I know." Mm-hmm. You know, so he knew what I was thinking, and, you know, these guys train for that, and, you know, how would I have gotten out there? I couldn't have gotten out on my own, you know, pretty fortunate.
You had a lot of angels on the trail that day. Yes. Speaking of trail angels.
Yes, that's right.
You also referenced cost earlier. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask if there was a cost to this rescue mission and what the other costs might look like to complete this hike.
Yeah. Well, I thought I had just bought myself a Black Hawk helicopter. Yeah. I thought, oh, Lord, how am I going to pay for this? I didn't have insurance. I had health travel insurance. So, you know, if I, you know, had to go to a health facility and, you know, get something out of my eye or whatever, you know, I had health insurance, but I didn't have insurance to fly me out on a Black Hawk helicopter. Turned out that where I fell was in a state park or federal park, but there's funds there for rescue. And the Air National Guard, you know, they train every month, and then every summer they're on for a week. They use it as part of their training, you know. So, no, I didn't have to pay anything for it. Yeah, I was really blessed. Yeah.
Good birthday present. Yeah.
But there is a cost to registering to do this hike in the first place, is there not? And getting your permit? Like
that? Yeah, there's no cost to the permit.
Okay.
Yeah, you do have to have a permit.
Yeah.
The cost is in your travel, your gear.
Cheeseburgers.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. You know, when you get into town, I mean, you're craving a cheeseburger and maybe a beer to wash it down.
Mm. Yeah.
And of course, if you know, you got to check into a motel, you got to, you know, once every week or two, you got to do your laundry.
And you went through five pairs of shoes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 You know, a lot of people ask, well, you know, you went through five pair of boots. Don't wear boots. You know, nobody wears boots really on the hike anymore. They, trail runners are real popular. Kind of what I'm wearing right now.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But they're lightweight, but they're also, they're not as durable as a pair of boots would be, but you're not going to get blisters. They dry fast if they get wet, but yeah, five pair of shoes and, you know, a pair of these shoes is $200 a piece. Yeah. So I did the math. It equates to close to $3 a mile is what it is. Yeah. You would think, oh, it's like, it must be free. You know, you're just walking on the trail.
Yeah.
There's, you know, gear is expensive too.
I didn't realize the permit was free, but there is a bit of a process to secure one of those.
Yeah. It's quite the process. And, you know, I get it. You know, they're trying to protect what's out there. You know, if they allow too many people on it, the damage that can be done. So, yeah, you know, it's a lottery system, basically. So you submit your name, you fill an application, and then it's a random lottery. And when they pick your number, you pick your date for starting. So you actually have to tell them when you're starting, when you're ending. In fact, when I had my accident, I was off the trail for 5 weeks. I had to contact them, let them know about the changes I had to make. And of course, they accommodate that.
How would that work for Scooby going with you? Or say if Mike and I applied, can you apply as a duo? or you just hope you both get picked and you choose the same start date?
Yeah. So that's funny you asked that, because at the time, Annie and I were on a camping trip together with our camper, and I was in a campground with my laptop on the day that they were opening up, waiting for my random number to come up. And Scooby, I can't remember exactly what number it was, but Scooby was a bit ahead of me. And we had some dates that we agreed on that would work. And the first date was already filled up. And then he went to the second date and he went ahead and got his. He applied or asked for that date for a start date. And then when my turn came up, I asked for the same start date and I got it. Yeah.
Started out with good luck.
Yeah, sure did.
I did a hike once with my brother and a couple of my cousins, and Paulet's Cove in Cape Breton. I'm not sure if you've ever been in there.
No.
And it's not a massive hike. It takes about 4 hours or so, but you do go over two pretty big hills, and we had beer and stuff in our backpack, so it was pretty heavy.
And a guitar.
Yeah, a guitar. It was more than 30 pounds anyway, but... We got in there, and yeah, you're pretty tired by the end of it, up and down the hills and lugging all that. And it's just, you ultimately push through these trees and you come upon this beautiful valley. There's a river running down, some wild horses running around, eagles above, some seals in the water. And we went down, and when we jumped in the water, the horse ended up eating some of our food, whatever, another story. But We were starving, and we cooked up this meal, and it was like beans, wieners. We threw a whole bunch of stuff in. And if I was to eat that like right now, I'm like, this is disgusting.
But it tasted great on the trail.
In that moment, like if I was to list the top 10 meals I've ever had, that would be one of them for sure. Like, I don't know if it's just your appreciation grows so much because you don't have access to everything. And you referenced this kind of earlier about how all these little things just you're able to appreciate. I can imagine that on a hike like either one of these, that you're experiencing this on a daily basis in different ways.
Yeah, you do. A tortilla with peanut butter and M&Ms on it, you know, and maybe if you're lucky, some Fritos in there too. You know, it is. It's like manna from heaven, and it does. It tastes so good. But would I go into the kitchen right now and make that for myself? Probably not.
Yeah. And not even just food, though. Just like after your feet are sore from hiking for X amount of days, and you get your new pair of shoes, like, oh my God, this feels like heaven on my feet or whatever it may be. But yeah, it just seems like your appreciation for things grows drastically when you don't have access to all the things you normally do. And like I mentioned earlier, before we started, I'm going into a little spot with no water, no electricity. And some people, that's like a nightmare. But when I go in, it's just, oh yeah, I can just shut off from the rest of the world. And whatever I eat in there, whatever I do is going to just feel amazing because it's... In the moment, that's all I need.
You know, another good example is when I was hiking the desert in, this would have been on the Continental Divide, but I was in New Mexico, hiking through New Mexico, and water was, you're carrying so much more water. It's rare that you can come across water.
Yeah.
You have your maps and you know where it's supposed to be and you're hoping that it's there. Mm-hmm. And there'd be water caches that people would set up for you, which is, again, manna from heaven. But there are water sources that if I took you to them today and said, hey, go get some water out of that cow trough with the green algae just and the scum floating on the top, you would say, what are you, crazy? But when I came across that cow trough and I saw that water, I broke out my filter and I just filtered it and drank it like it had just come out of the tap. Mm-hmm. And I was so happy to have it. Yeah.
The maps that indicate these stop points, or maybe it's an access road that takes you into town, how far in advance are you planning your days?
Yeah. Well, months before you even start your hike, you're starting to already plan which town you think you want to get into. And there, for a variety of reasons, there's apps that I have on my phone that are satellite driven. It used to be called Guthook. It's called Far Out now, but it indicates what is in each town. So there's a town coming up and they have a laundry facility. It's like, great, I can do my laundry this week. Or they have a good grocery store or a post office where I had mailed something that I can pick up a package. You can mail general delivery to a post office and pick up. So there were times that you're mostly, honestly, a week in advance. You can have the best laid plan and you can have a spreadsheet and you can say, I'm going to hike this many miles this day and this many miles the next day. And I'm going to get to this town on this day.
And then you fall 67 feet.
All the obstacles that are thrown in your way. So
generally,
for the most part, a week or two in advance. Yeah.
Can you describe the feeling of completing these huge achievements?
Emotional, you know. When I, my summit of Mount Katahdin was a teary, emotional, you know, I was on the trail for 142 days and, you know, the adversity that you face on that type of, you know, 2,200 mile trip, you start, I guess what actually I can remember that night before our summit, knowing that the next morning was going to be the last day I was on the trail. I was having flashbacks and just going, in fact, I was going through my phone, looking at all the pictures and reliving it and thinking, oh my God, I remember that. I can't believe, oh my God, that was amazing. And just going through all these pictures and reliving it and knowing that that next day was it. And then I go home and what's home going to be like? Mm-hmm. You know, but first I had to get to that summit and it was so fitting. You know, it was like definitely saved the best for last. You know, just that walking up there with Scooby, he and I just knowing in our hearts that this was it. It's you're somewhat tortured because you don't want it to end.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want it to end. I want to keep going. Trail life has become such a part of your life. But at the same time, boy, did I miss my wife and I couldn't wait to get home. So it's a, you're tortured by how blessed you were to be able to do it, how blessed you were to be able to complete it, all the people that you met on the way, all the people that helped you. I always tell people, you never hike the Appalachian Trail by yourself. Nobody could do it on their own. They have to have that support. They have to have the moral support. My spouse, I mean, God bless Anne Marie for the support that she provided me. She took on our whole business here, you know, the bed and breakfast. She took on all of her personal finances and, you know, everything that had to do with our life together as a couple. She took it all on, which she tells me now was good for her. You know, she thinks that she grew through that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Mike, it was a tearjerker when when I saw that sign at the summit. It was crazy. The PCT was a little bit different. You know, you read the book, Kristen, so you know that I skipped the Sierra Nevada when I got through that first 650 miles with Scooby. Scooby actually drove me another 600 miles north to skip the Sierra Nevada because at that time, it was late May. There was still 40 feet of snow. It was a high snow pack year. And a lot of people were skipping this year and then coming back to it. So I skipped, got up to Northern California. In between there, I ended up with my fall and my what we call the incident. Came home for 5 weeks, got back, got to Canada, and got to that monument where I'm looking at the border between the U.S. and Canada. I'm a dual citizen. I had both my passports with me in my pack. And there's a little American flag and a little Canadian flag on this monument. And generally, that would be the end of the hike, but it wasn't. It was the end of that portion because I still had to go back and do the Sierra Nevada. Mm. I said I had to go back. I was excited to go back. I couldn't wait to go back, but it was a different feel than the Appalachian Trail where I had started down in Georgia and I ended in Maine. That break in between kind of took, I don't want to say it robbed me of the celebrating that you would expect to have. I still celebrate it. It was still quite an achievement. I still walked every single mile, but it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
Do people always do them from south to north?
Not always, but mostly.
Yeah. Is that just, it goes along with the seasons better?
Exactly. Yeah. So you can start earlier. If you're going southbound, you start later in the season. So now you risk everything in reverse. So, for instance, on the Pacific Crest Trail, if you're starting in British Columbia and you're heading south, you have to race to get to the Sierra before it starts snowing again. When you're going northbound, you're waiting on the snow to melt.
Right.
Yeah.
It was because of your discipline and consistency in journaling and blogging that you have two very successful great reads from these hikes that you've completed. Tell me about how that factored into just keeping a rhythm going.
Sure. When I knew I was going to hike the Appalachian Trail, I shared with you that I'd read everything I could get my hands on. I already had some experiences on the Appalachian Trail with my sons. And I knew that I wanted to keep in touch with family and friends. So I found a site called trailjournals.com. And I started a journal. And I started it pre-hike. I started building up about the research I was doing and writing about it. And I started getting a lot of interest and a lot of people hitting on my journal and about my training and my planning and my getting to Georgia, you know, meeting with my family, and they did a big send off for me, my two sons and their families. And I just continued to journal every day, and I was disciplined to the point where I knew that if I had skipped a single day, that some of those people might be disappointed that were keeping up with my journal. And I felt almost an obligation. It's like, hey, I can't let these people down. They're writing me nice notes and they're enjoying my journal. And if I don't journal, they're not going to know the next day if I did journal, and they're not going to continue to follow me. It also gave me that support when I would read. I'd get into a town and I'd look up and I'd see all these great comments from friends or people I'd never met in my entire life that just showed a sincere interest in my hike. I would say that it would be accountable.
Yeah,
they were making me accountable to myself. I knew I had to do that 25 miles the next day, and it's not. That sounds negative. I did it for myself, but I knew they were counting on me, and they were in my corner, and they were rooting for me. So that really helped me. But I also knew that if I didn't journal and I gave myself permission to not journal a single day, that the next time I didn't feel like journaling, that would be easier. And it would be easier the next time after that. And then knowing that if I didn't have that journal, I wouldn't be able to look back upon it. And that's why people journal, right? You want a record of it. And, you know, I guess it was sometime about midway, I realized I had 200,000 people following me. And I realized, you know, there's a true appetite for this. And I started getting to my head, hey, maybe I should write a book, you know. And, you know, came home and wrote Whistler's Walk, which is my first book on the Appalachian Trail. And then when it came time for me to hike the PCT, I started journaling again. And for the same reason, but I didn't do it with the intention of writing another book. And it wasn't until I was in a couple hundred miles I realized, wow, there's really a lot of content here. That it was organic, just happened, you know, the people I met, things I saw, the things that I was able to write about, I realized there's something here. And I'm really proud how that book turned out.
Yeah. And it begs the question, is this going to be a trilogy?
Yeah. And I think I referenced the Continental Divide. There's three long hikes that make up what they call the Triple Crown in North America. It is the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. The Continental Divide Trail starts at the southern border of New Mexico and goes over the Rockies into Alberta. And I made an attempt to hike that trail in 2022. And I got all the way through New Mexico, which was, the desert was spectacular. Not at all what I thought it was going to be, just absolutely beautiful. I had visions of dunes, and it wasn't that at all. It was high desert. Just it was a super bloom year, and super bloom is it was a high rain season. So all those seeds that had laid dormant for all the years bloomed, and the mountains were just covered in glorious color. It was just beautiful. Mm. Made it to Colorado. Almost got out of Colorado, and I had a slip on mud. And broke my fibula. Yeah. Whoa. So, yeah. So I was unable to complete that hike. So it's still a goal. And I'm hoping maybe next year to reattempt. And I'd like to have that Triple Crown.
Is there anything else you've done in your life that was comparable to the feeling that you got during these hikes? Or these outlier experiences? This is a unique thing that only they could allow you to feel that way.
You know, Mike, you're a musician. I've enjoyed listening to some of your podcast. And Kristen, you're an artist. And I think that we all have something that defines who we are. My wife is a musician teacher. And I truly believe she was placed on this earth to teach. And she's got that talent, and she's defined as a teacher. I think that hiking defines me. So to answer your question, I think, no, I think, you know, I tell people all the time that, you know, you're giving me this forum here to talk about my passion and my love, and you're showing genuine interest. I have to remind myself sometimes that when I start talking to people about my passion and my love of hiking, that they have absolutely zero interest in it. And when I see their eyes glazing over, I realize, oh, you idiot, they don't care about your hiking. But then there are those that do. And then,
we certainly do.
Well, I appreciate it. But I would say, to answer your question, no, not really. I think that hiking is a passion of mine, and it's what has come to define me. It's I own it. It's mine. When I achieve those great miles and look back on it, it's like, yep, yeah, I did that.
And you feel that it has to be these exceptionally long hikes to get that same experience? Could you go out and just go for a couple
Has
hours?
Has Anne ever asked you that question?
You know, I generally walk about 5 miles a day.
Yeah.
And I do that. I tell people all the time I do that so I can have that guilt-free beer. You know, just to burn off calories. You know, do I get enjoyment of going out there and hiking the same route every single day, you know, that 5 miles? Not really. I think I said to you guys earlier that I'm an all-in kind of guy. I don't want to hike a section of the Continental Divide. I want to hike the entire Continental Divide. You know, that's, I felt I left it undone. I'm not somebody who leaves something undone. When Amory encouraged me and supported me in going back and completing, the Pacific Crest Trail, that was when I did complete it, I did tell myself, I can hang my hat there. That's, I did it. You know, with everything that I faced, all that adversity, all the drama that was associated with it. I got through it. Once again, I didn't do it on my own. I was blessed to have, and every hiker will tell you this. I've had some people tell me, oh, you're taking advantage of these people. And it's like, what are you talking about? Well, you know, they're driving you places. And it's like, they want to, you know, and, you know, yeah, I'll leave $10 sitting on the seat when I get out of the car for gas. And because I know they won't take money from me. You know, it's people like that that make it possible for people like me to achieve that. If somebody said, here's a pack, there's 30 pounds and it's got all your provisions, it's got everything you need, hike from Georgia and hike to Maine, or hike from Southern California to Canada, and just do it on your own, I don't think you could do it. I think it'd be impossible, I think.
It's part of what makes this story really so beautiful, so human, so inspiring, but also want to acknowledge and give you credit for exactly as you've said that you did this. Yeah. Yes, it took a team of people, but it was your will and determination that walked each and every one of those steps. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we've missed about your story that you want to share?
No, anything. Let me think. You know, I would have to say that I think you both asked me all the questions that I would have hoped you would have asked me. You know, it's, you know, unscripted, so raw, and it's like all the things that I want to tell everybody in what an hour. I think we achieved it, and I'm so appreciative. I really thank you. Yeah, thank you both.
We feel lucky to get to chat with you, Bill. Your story's amazing. It's inspiring. It's uplifting too. And you approach everything that I've seen in life. Even when we met you behind the bar, you're just a cheerful, happy guy who's just a nice human. And I can see that in everything you do and how you care about people. And we're so glad that we've come across you and we get to learn from you. And we'll have some more questions maybe afterwards or throughout the days and months ahead, maybe about some hiking that we're interested in. But we appreciate this immensely.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Bill, eh?
I hope Bill will hang out with us every time we go back to Annapolis.
Yeah, well, we'll see him at the Annapolis Brewing, so.
Yeah, we definitely pop in there for the cider flight that they have is my favorite. They're just little tasters, and yeah. You pick your favorite if you want to upgrade your glass size.
It's a great little spot, and very, very busy. Like, every night they have something, vinyl night, karaoke night, or whatever they have going seems to attract a lot of people.
We're Annapolis Royal wannabes, aren't we?
Yeah.
One day we'll pick out our home.
And we have a lot on the go ourselves here. Announce my album release show with the Town Heroes, which you are putting on.
This is very exciting for me. We don't have many secrets between us, so this is a big one for me to keep from you. That myself along with my Curiosity Club collaborators, Aaron Bulger and Steph McNamara, are throwing you and Bruce, the Town Heroes, the ultimate secret album release show, meaning everybody who is attending will know exactly what's going on other than you guys.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So the information's out there. We're obviously not looking at it and don't want to see it, and if you know about it, do not post about it publicly. Post about the show and how you're going and you're bringing your friends, but don't say where it is, kind of thing.
And you guys are going to be blindfolded and taken to the venue, and you won't have any idea where it is or what the show is all about until you have taken the stage, essentially.
Yeah. And We'll talk a lot more about that, but just I wanted to mention that.
Yeah,
we'll maybe do an episode about it.
June 22nd is the show. We'll put the link in the show notes to grab your tickets. But yes, we'll certainly be talking lots more about this between now and June.
Yeah.
And anything else exciting on your horizon?
A new song coming out May 10th. I'll get a pre... What do you call it?
Pre-save.
Pre-save, yeah. Slipped my mind for a second there. Get a pre-save out to the world pretty soon. And this song is the most Canadian song ever.
It's a good one. I can vouch for it.
Yeah, Hockey Fights, I'll say. That's what it's called.
And we're taking off to ECMA's coming up, and Togetherland is going to open the day after your single release. So lots coming up, lots to chat about, and we'll tell y'all about it every week here.
Okay, folks, thanks for tuning in, and thanks to Bill for chatting with us, and hope you and Anne-Marie are doing awesome, but cheers.